You know, one of the things we enjoy talking about in this state is food. We like to eat food and we like to talk about it. Larry Mueller here. And great to have back Mike Beno, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. He's with us by phone today, as is copy editor Chris Krieger. Chris oversees What's Cooking section of the magazine and has quite a history with editing recipes. So we'll talk with the both of them about the magazine, about how recipes are selected, some of the food-themed stories in the latest issues. So what would you like to know about the recipes chosen for Our Wisconsin? Other questions about the magazine, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mike Beno, welcome back.
It's almost lunchtime, Larry. I'm ready. Got that napkin tucked into the top of my shirt, and I'm ready to pull up to the trough.
Well, Chris Krieger, are you there? Are you ready, too?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Larry, for inviting me to be on your program.
Well,
it's good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you both here. Mike, why are recipes a part of Our Wisconsin magazine?
Well, as you just alluded to, it is the universal subject everybody eats, and that's why there's so many cooking magazines out there. Our Wisconsin spun out of the suite of magazines known as Ryman Publications in Milwaukee. The biggest magazine there was Taste of Home, and to put that in perspective, Time Magazine at its height was 4.2 million. Roy Ryman founded Taste of Home magazine, and it went to 5.3 million. Okay, why? Because the Ryman audience was largely a country audience. They're a little bit more rural, possibly a little bit older, and they weren't the very uptown demographic that magazines like Gourmet, Bon Appetit, and Cooking Light chased. But that one magazine was bigger than all three of those combined. And the hallmark of the recipes there was easy. Ingredients you could get at any store in any rural area, and tasting darn good. And we relied on the readers themselves to supply them. And we largely do the same thing here in Our Wisconsin Magazine. We follow that model. We ask readers for their stories, their photos, and their recipes, and they do send them in.
And Chris, you oversee the What's Cooking sections. What does that entail for you as an editor?
Yes, well, I've been very fortunate. First, I want to say to be on the staff of Our Wisconsin since we launched almost 8 years ago. Really fun and, you know, wonderful publication to work on. And as far as the, you know, as Mike said, we invite our readers to send in recipes, and then we feature one home cook each issue. And in fact, I have to mention my good friend and neighbor, Julie Horn from Minocqua, was featured in our October-November issue. And, but then we also, in addition, for our recipe card section, we have access to those Ryman recipes from, you know, our past readers, which is really nice, gives us more options when we are planning each issue in terms of the variety of recipes, and we can choose seasonal ones and full meals if we, you know, so choose. And then, of course, the beautiful food photography is part of that as well. And I know when I'm making recipes, I'm more inclined to make something if I can see what it's supposed to look like and see if I can make it look like that when I'm done.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I know what you mean, because if cookbook doesn't have any photos in it, or a magazine with recipes doesn't have photos, I almost never would I use it. I'd like to see what it looks like, too.
Yes.
And you
and
of course you've been with Our Wisconsin since it started, but you have a long history with in this field.
Yes, yes. In fact, I was really, it was a wonderful opportunity to work on all the cookbooks and food magazines at Ryman Publications for all those years. And I learned so much from those food editors. Mary Beth Young, Colleen Martin, Sue Jurak. I owe a lot of credit to them for helping me learn, you know, how do you really edit a recipe, make sure that the reader, you know, can figure out, you know, make sure it makes sense for the reader at home, the home cook, to be able to make it. And, you know, we're always looking for, you know, it's really nice. They're down-home recipes. They're not complicated and fancy. And so, you know, that helps too. And yeah.
Well, Mike, do you get to taste all these recipes, or what do you do?
Well, back in the day at Ryman Publications, when we were all under one roof, and Sue just mentioned the three folks you mentioned, they're editors, but also home economists. When these recipes come in, they would be selected, and they would be tested by a group of 23 home economists. A lot of mail came in, and to make sure that they work, for one thing, to make sure that they're food safe. And boy, did we sampled a whole lot. Now, this is one of the drawbacks of working remotely. So I'm sitting up here in the woods, and you know, send pemmican. We're starving. It's cold. But, you know, people eat with their eyes, the pictures you just mentioned. Yeah. And I look at these pictures, and my mouth's watering. But, you know, working on recipes from afar, I don't get to taste them so much anymore. Wish I could.
Yeah, there's some beauties in the in all the issues of the magazine, but I'm looking at this ribbon pumpkin bread that has a cream cheese filling that I'm just wanting a piece of that right about now.
Well, and I'm actually glad that you mentioned that particular recipe. I can give it an extra little tip if anybody wants to make that. I made it recently, 2-3 weeks ago, and that cream cheese filling, it's real useful if you mix it real smooth, because unfortunately our recipe had only just said to combine those filling ingredients.
Yeah.
But once the cream cheese is softened, it really helps to blend that real well, and then, you know, helps when spreading it on the first layer of batter. And yeah, it is really pretty, isn't it? And I gave a loaf to our neighbors. They loved it.
I would bet that they did love it. Well, talking today with Mike Beno and Chris Krieger of Our Wisconsin Magazine. Questions or comments or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chris, as an editor, what format for presenting the recipes seems to do the best?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, when you're laying out, the way you lay it out in Our Wisconsin, you've got on one page, you've got a description of what you have for a recipe, and then on the next page, you have the actual recipe itself. Does that seem to work the best?
Well, I know we started doing these are kind of, it's supposed to be like a recipe card format, so people could actually clip it out and have, and we used to actually have it be sideways and decided it was more useful for people to have it presented in this manner. Our artist had came up with this design. And yeah, I think just having the kind of the introduction or sometimes some little tips about the recipe on the front, and then keeping all the ingredients and directions all together on the same side is, you know, useful for someone when they're making it to not be flipping a page, you know, and just having it right in front of them all together.
But Mike, I bet there's people listening, our readers, who don't want to cut the magazine up.
You know, actually, I wish they would, because if they deface their magazine, that would stop this pass along that just, well, yeah, we'd rather have everybody subscribe.
Oh, man. How many subscriptions are you at, by the way?
A little over 100,000 readership here, and that's at a good and comfortable level. And what we're happiest with is the fact that heading into year 8, people are renewing. They're continuing to renew, so that tells me Chris is doing a good job selecting recipes, and the way she selects these issue to issue is kind of interesting. I think Chris has nearly a year's worth of these chosen ahead, and there's a lot of things she has to consider as she chooses 8 recipes into the issue. Maybe we could talk about that.
That'd be interesting, Chris. You got to think ahead then.
Oh sure, I have these wealth of archive recipes. So when I have time, I spread out all the books and look through them, and just truly these photos just catch my eye, and I think, oh, that's perfect for fall, and I have them slotted by season. Try to look for things that will work well together as a meal, and look for some that might be good for, holidays. I'm hoping to inspire readers to think, oh, I could make that for, New Year's Eve party or Christmas Eve or a family gathering, and trying to, hoping families will, these are easy recipes they can make for weekday meals and have dinner together, which, is so important. And,
It's a nice thought process that goes into that. Mike, I know Chris mentioned a Wisconsin cook. You feature a Wisconsin cook each issues. How do you find that person typically?
Okay, well, they're good home cooks. They're local people from all around Wisconsin, and they have reputations for good cooking. And I would say that... that's a good question for Chris, because she just talked about in our October-November issue on page 70, we have a cook wearing an apron and a big, nice smile.
Yeah.
And Chris, how did we line this person up to be our model?
Yes, I went next door and said, Julie, would you like to be featured in the magazine? And she was very excited. Unfortunately, I don't think she's listening today. I think she had an appointment. But she knew exactly... immediately which recipe would be best, this creamy carrot casserole, which sounds nondescript, but she said it got her kids to eat carrots, and they're grown now, and they still love it. And so
there you go.
Good stories. Yep.
Well, we are talking today with Mike Beno and Chris Krieger from Our Wisconsin Magazine. Always fun to talk about the magazine and what's going on with it. We will take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at Our Wisconsin Magazine today, a lot of the features in Our Wisconsin have to do with food, including recipes, and so... great to have Mike Beno with us today, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, and Chris Krieger, copy editor, with him. She also oversees the What's Cooking section of the magazine, and she's worked in the past for Pillsbury, Betty Crocker, popular magazines like Taste of Home, so it's great to have her along, too. So what do you want to know about recipe creation? Is there a recipe you'd like to see in Our Wisconsin? Maybe just a question about the magazine itself and the stories that it prints. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we did have an email from Mary Ann, who says she's working on her own cookbook and is wondering if Chris has any advice when it comes to... the writing instructions or any other tips for making recipes easier to follow.
Okay. Well, I would say important thing, make sure the ingredients are listed in the order that they're used is always useful. And in the directions, if you can split them up into, maybe shorter steps, separate paragraphs. It also, makes it easy for people to keep track of where they're at in the recipe. Those are two.
I notice you always write out teaspoon and tablespoon in the magazine, at least.
Yes, we always started doing that at, I think, some people would do sometimes, you know, the capital T for tablespoon or TSP. And I think we never were a fan of abbreviations. We figured just to be clear, it was just good to spell those out. And we always, spell out the ounces and pounds and all those things too, for, the different can sizes and product sizes. So, but sometimes space is a problem. And, then certainly abbreviations work in those cases.
But if they're small type, and if it's a T or TB or TSP, I sometimes have trouble seeing it myself.
And with, that you want to make sure, like with, baking powder and baking soda, very important ingredients that could definitely affect your outcome if you had the wrong amount. So,
yeah. I was making, he was talking about eyesight and problems. I was making some pancakes one morning, and there's a couple of little bottles there. One was for vanilla, and the other was for mint. And I mistakenly grabbed the mint and put it in. And as soon as it hit the batter, I, of course, smelled what I had done. And I thought, you know what? I tried to get it all out. And then I thought, well, I put some vanilla in. And I'm here to tell you that if you ever do that, just throw the whole bit away and start.
You had to try. I would have tried it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was a kitchen calamity, and Mike and the I was just chuckling as I was reading through. You've got one section called Kitchen Calamities. Readers fess up to some culinary disasters they'd rather forget. And the first one just made me laugh. Mom was making dressing when I was a kid. I don't know if you remember that. She asked me to crawl up and look in the cupboard for the onions. I did so. She continued putting together her turkey dinner, which was a success. And after dinner, everybody raved about the dressing. And Mom accepted the compliments, although she was later perplexed when she spotted the onion bag still in the cupboard. "Where did you get the onions?" she said. Doris said, "Well, I pointed to a bag next to them, which was filled with tulip bulbs."
Yep.
So they got tulip bulbs sliced up instead of onions.
Yeah, we get a lot of interesting and fun stories about people's blunders in the kitchen when they started cooking, and made some mistakes. We all do along the way, but it usually takes a few years for people to live some of these down to the point where they can go ahead and laugh about it now and share it with other people. And they're good sports to do that. We ask for these fun moments in the magazine, and people do, they do share them. And that kind of gets to the casual nature of this magazine. There's nothing too superior. It's very neighborly, and like people sharing recipes, recipe exchanges among neighbors and small communities are quite common, going back years, back generations in America. Really what Chris is overseeing in this magazine, five pages, the cooking section she's essentially in charge of. She not only selects the recipes, she writes them all consistently so they all work. She adds the tips, and this exchange, if you will, of reader recipes, she sort of is at the center of it, and really that gets to the essence of what the magazine is, asking Wisconsin neighbors to chip in their stories, or even if they're embarrassing ones about the time they blew up a ham in a can in the kitchen by not taking it out of the can before they put it in the oven. That's
somebody's grandmother did that.
Yeah, that's one from Milwaukee. Granny exploded a canned ham because she put it in the oven to the time it said, but didn't take it out of the can first. And they went up and looked and found the war zone, let's say. All her grandkids came up, and she looked around, and this old German lady expressed it this way. She used the same saying she always used when she burned her toast. She kind of chuckled and said, "It might as well have been done as half."
Oh, my goodness me. And when you said chips, but you were talking about chipping in, I was reminded of another recipe that I thought was, oh, this is going to be a good one. And, Chris, it was the oven Parmesan chips. Have you made those?
I have, actually. Yes, very good. And it's really, you know, such a nice recipe at this time of year. You want to have the oven on, and it goes, you know, really nicely with beef and, well, and pork, too. I think, actually, we had it with pork. And, yes, there. And, of course, you have to have lots of recipes with cheese in Wisconsin. So I often, you know, look for those. And, yes, the Parmesan is, that is a nice one.
I thought, well, that's one I'm going to try as well. And the stories that you've got a number of stories that relate to food always. The one that I was drawn to right away had to do with Tombstone Pizzas and the history of Tombstone Pizzas.
Yep. I think people in Wisconsin know their way around those things. That's for sure. Tombstone Pizza, it's beyond a Wisconsin icon. It really is to the roots of frozen food, period, in America. In 1951-2, the pot pie was introduced. 1955, I believe, Swanson came out with TV dinners with the foil and, you know, yeah. That's the wow, eat TV, eat while you're watching TV. Frozen pizzas came to the fore in very early 1960s, and Tombstone Pizza began in 62 when a tavern keeper by the name of Pep Simic moved with his family. He grew up on a farm in Ogama, and they needed help on the family farm because of a death in the family. His brother was running the farm and also running a small beer bar at the time. They could serve beer to folks 18 and up in the early 60s. And it was too much work, so his brother Pep decided to move back up from Chicago with his family and head that up. And one night in the early 60s, he was in there and was cutting it loose, dancing a little bit to the Peppermint Twist, broke his leg, was hobbling on crutches, going bored out of his skull because he couldn't stand behind his bar and work. And so he started tinkering with pizza recipes. Checked with some people he remembered from Chicago that ran Italian restaurants, and came up with a pizza that he thought would work. They started making them, two families, in this tiny kitchen, probably 8x10, making them, wrapping them, and putting them with dry ice in the trunk of a 59 Cadillac, and he'd drive them around to motels and campgrounds and you name it, taverns, and people started going nuts for it. And they took off, and now to fast forward to today, Tombstone Pizza spun out of this tavern, which was named Tombstone Tap on the east side of Medford because it was across from a cemetery. Today, there is a plant that's the remnant of this business, which was sold to Nestle, Kraft, then Nestle. It spins 127 million pies to this day, a nearly 400,000 square foot plant, but a little bit east of town, the remnants of that tavern, it's an old flat-top building, is still there, and cars rush by it every day. And probably the people that are driving past that have no clue that a multi-billion dollar, and that's true, sector of American food commerce largely started there. The DiGiorno brand alone, which is made in Wisconsin, accounts for $1 billion in sales. So from that... from this fellow who tripped in his bar, he stumbled over an idea, and it's gone global. One more thing, Larry, back to Chris and food and recipes. Anytime there's a recipe, I thought I'd bring this up, not tied to that food section, people bounce recipes off us, and they show up in different stories. It goes right into Chris's hands and say, Chris, should we even put this in?
And she says yes or no.
Yeah.
Or maybe you say, let me work on that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's a challenge to edit recipes that you haven't, don't know that they've gone through a test kitchen. And sometimes I do make them and, just kind of make sure that, I think it's going to work. And, because we want our readers to have, good results when they make them at home. So.
For sure. Sarah, we were talking about stories of food stories of issues. Sarah in Lodi has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Well, when I was a little girl, my mother always made her ham and scalloped potatoes in a pressure cooker. And one day she blew up the pressure cooker. I guess the little valve froze that was on the top of it.
Oh, boy.
And we ended up literally, and my mother never cussed, ever. And my mother said a swear word. So we were running around laughing hysterically because she swore, and there was ham and scalloped potatoes falling off the ceiling, the walls, the front of the stove, everywhere. And I tell you right now, I have never used a pressure cooker.
Well, the ones they make today, Sarah, are a little safer than those older ones.
Exactly. And my mother was very Irish Catholic, and we could not believe she said a swear word.
Well, thanks for that story. That's a neat one. I think John and Shano has something about maybe a story about Tombstone or a comment about it. Hi, John.
Well, hi, guys. Always love your show. I was a young pup, 53 now, but back from 73 to 76, I lived in Medford, Wisconsin. Our elementary school, every Friday, served Tombstone pizza and chocolate milk.
Yeah.
That was our treat of the week.
That's Wisconsin.
That sure is Wisconsin. Tombstone pizza and chocolate milk. And, one other part of that story, just to get back to that for a minute, they used to give away when they'd go around to bars and so forth. They'd say, well, if you buy a dozen pizzas or something, we'll give you the little oven that you can use.
A lot of those are still around, that little silver oven they actually have a Tombstone logo on them. They're on back bars in some of these old, old resorts. There's one named Wittig's in Boulder Junction dating to the 20s, and they showed me their little pizza oven in the back with the Tombstone label on it. And what was interesting about that, okay, Pep Simic was a good promoter, and he would go into a tavern midday, and he'd tell the owner, if you buy a dozen of these pizzas, we're going to give you this little oven. And you're going to sell that dozen pizzas right away, but don't take my word for it. I'm going to cook one up right now for the folks here at the tavern. And people drinking beer in the middle of the day were a little hungry, and so they would rave about it, and instantly they made a sale of 12 of them. I found Pep's daughter, Lauren, in Suamico, and her cousin, also over toward Ogama, and both those ladies had Rhonda, and both of them had worked there, and this was a family business in the beginning, and Lauren's brother's job was to take back these pizza ovens and try to clean them up and get them in good, pristine shape so they could be reused. Sometimes that didn't work, but that's what the guys did in high school, and Lauren said, she started on the pizza line working 7 days a week, making and wrapping pizzas in high school at age 15. She said, I didn't have a date all my years in high school because I was making pizzas 7 days a week.
And they made a right. You probably couldn't get away with it today, because I think they did it right on the kitchen stove.
Make residential fire. Kitchen, yeah, even smaller than a residential kitchen. Yep, they were stewing up 5 gallons of sauce at a time. They got from a restaurant in Chicago. That sauce, she claims, made all the difference. They were wrapped there. And it was all two families making a living. That was the beginning of this. And it became the number one frozen pizza in terms of sales in the United States in the 80s.
Yeah, it was amazing. I ate a lot of Tombstone pizzas.
We all did.
Probably we all did. Well, as long as we're on food, one of the features in your magazine every time is an Amish story, an Amish family story, and there's even food in this one.
Yeah, Chris, on page 47, I see a recipe. Do you remember that one?
Yep, fried cornmeal mush. I remember without even looking. Yes, they don't send a recipe every time, but when they do, we like to include it because I know our readers like to hear about what they eat for their meals and, you know, try to make some of their recipes as well. So.
And, you know, I look at that recipe, and it's a simple recipe, really easy to follow, and then you've got a photo of some fried cornmeal mush, and they kind of look like pancakes.
Yeah, that's going back to our archive and coming up we did have fried cornmeal. I don't know if it's mush, but when you think about it, all pancakes kind of start as mush. But the interesting thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, Larry, because some of these recipes coming into Chris, people pass around recipes from cookbooks a lot and off the backs of boxes and cans and maybe tweak them and get them the way they like them for their family. That's generally how people go at it. Well, some of these really are heirloom. The ones coming in from the Amish community are written out by hand, torn out on spiral paper, heirlooms passed through the community, and they're not expressed in the consistent, clear way that people that you see in a cookbook. They're like grandma's recipes, great grandma's recipes probably, and that's when we have to pull in Chris with her long experience at Taste of Home and Pillsbury, etc. Chris, look this over and see what you think. And most of the time she says, yeah, sure, we can get this. We can put this in. It'll work. She might look at food safety, which she has learned through the years. She might look at cooking times and things like that. Sometimes they're cooking on wood stoves, and you have to take that into account. But she comes up with ways to make these things work, and we drop them in, and that's all about giving benefit to the reader. A little extra recipe to try for a kicker. We had a sauerkraut cake a couple issues ago, a chocolate sauerkraut cake. Add kraut to your cake, and Chris, I think that's for moisture, right?
Yeah, that's right. And in the case of this, I probably would have called them cornmeal patties. But, you know, fried cornmeal mush does kind of have a, you know, homey sound to it, and didn't change the name of their recipe.
Well, I tell you what, it's so simple. That's another one I can try, too, because I like simple. Like most people, I think, when it comes to recipes, you want something that you have the ingredients or you can easily get them, and the directions are simple and easy to follow. And I'm one of these guys who I tend to follow a recipe the way it's given to me. I have friends who fool around with the recipes before they even try it the first time, and then sometimes the results aren't so hot.
Yes, I do that. I follow it the first time, and then sometimes I might change it a little and, you know, add a little more spice or... Yes.
Well, I tell you what, Chris, it's fun talking to you. And Mike Mino, it's always fun talking with you. And I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us, Larry. Yep.
Appreciate it very much. Mike Mino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. Chris Krieger, the copy editor of Our Wisconsin also oversees the What's Cooking section. And there are a lot, we talked food today, but there are a lot of other stories from Wisconsin writers in the magazine, and it's always fun for me to go through them and maybe for you as well. Tomorrow we'll talk about eating disorders, orthorexia, and then we'll take a look at incorporating exercise into your life. In the meantime, stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.